Welcome to LCUUC. There are no RE classes this summer, and thus none today. Children and youth are welcome to remain in the service and participate with us. We will not be taking a collection today within the service. You are welcome to place any donations in the basket by the door as you leave today. And I would encourage you all to move closer to the front. We light the chalice today with these words. If the flame of a chalice were a tongue, what would it say to you? If your words lit the world, what would you say to make it shine? May the light of your tongue banish all fear and darkness. Take a moment to greet those around you.
Yeah, I know.
Good morning and welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. Thank you all for joining us this morning. At LCUUC, we work to make a community built on love and trust and sharing. My name is Tammy Wolfgram, and I'm the worship associate for this morning's service. As a welcoming congregation, we hope that all visitors, wherever they are on life's journey and whatever their backgrounds, will find a lasting home here. No matter who you love or which pronouns you use to describe yourself, you are welcome here. Please join us for refreshments and conversation in the social hall after the service today. Please take a moment now to silence all electronics you may have with you today. And again, welcome. We're so pleased that you've chosen to celebrate and worship with us. Our community is composed of many voices, each engaged, as the fourth UU principle indicates, in a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. In this service, we have asked you to bring some words you have found from any source, a news item, a book, a poem, a tweet, something you've written, and share with the group. You are also welcome to just listen to the words that others share. Each person with something to share will have a chance to come forward to the podium, introduce yourself, and tell us something about what you've chosen and then present it to us. This is a chance to hear a kaleidoscope of the voices that will make up our community and of the larger conversations around us. Let me put in here that if for some reason you don't, either can't or don't want to come up to the front, we do have some mics in the back of the gym. We'll be happy to bring you one. So we have an idea of how many people would like to present something, and also so we can do it in an orderly manner. If you brought something to share, please raise your hand and give me your name. I'll add your name to the list, and then we'll call each person in turn who would like to present something. Okay, let's just start from over here.
Me.
Yeah.
Claire Johnson.
Claire.
Carol Steele.
Warren. Linda.
I'm only going by first names here, so you better know who you are.
Arlene.
Elizabeth.
Rick.
Diane.
Unless we run out of time.
Oh.
Yeah, if we run out of time, though.
David. We'll get you there. And Robin. Anybody that I missed? Okay. We'll put Jim at the end here. And if we're running short, I have some things that I'm actually Paul gave me that he has found. So I don't want to take credit whereas he's the one who actually found and wrote the little introductions for this. So if I read anything, chances are it was Paul. So one other thing is, did anybody bring any food to the service? Would you like to bring it up right now and put it in the basket? Thank you. Okay, let's start with Claire then.
Good morning. This is a monologue from the lead singer of the band Different Drugs of Ireland. And the lead singer is named Roy Arbuckle, and he has this really deep, rich Irish voice that I wish I could replicate, but you'll have to bear with me. On the day when the weight deadens on your shoulders and you stumble, may the clay dance to balance you. When your eyes freeze behind the gray window and the ghost of loss gets into you, may a flock of colors, red, green, indigo, and azure blue, come to awaken you in a meadow of delight. When the canvas frays in the cura of thought and the stain of ocean blackens beneath you, may there come across the waters a path of yellow moonlight to bring you safely home. May the nourishment of the earth be yours. May the clarity of the light be yours. May the fluency of the ocean be yours. And may the protection of the ancestors be yours. And so may a slow wind work these words of love around you, an invisible cloak to mind your life.
you, Claire. Can we have Harold then?
I'm sort of a student of many different things and approach my own personal theology about the same way. For the first 75 years of my life, I didn't really look into it very much. But the last 10 probably made up for it as I knew what I didn't want and looked for something that I did. One of the things which hit me like a ton of bricks was the concept of being a non-theist. And we won't go there anymore, but that was the first realization that I had, that there really were words out there which described my personal feelings. I ended up, and this was before I came here, finding a fairly comprehensive definition of secular humanism. All Unitarians understand secular humanism, I suspect. But I like the words that are used here to help define it, because it is a complex idea. And when someone asks you, you know, what do you believe in? And you say, I'm a secular humanist, there's probably not too many lights that flash recognition. So anyway, perhaps here, there may be something that you might take away. Secular humanism is a secular philosophy that espouses reason, ethics, and the search for human fulfillment, and especially rejects supernatural and religious dogma as the basis of morality and decision-making. Secular humanism is a life stance that focuses on the way human beings can lead happy and functional lives. Secular humanism, by the way, humanism here is always capitalized to distinguish it from various other humanisms. Though secular humanism posits that human beings are capable of being ethical and moral without religion or God, that is not to say it assumes humans to be inherently or innately good. Nor does it present humans as above nature or superior to it. By contrast, the humanist life stance emphasizes the unique responsibility facing humanity and the consequence of our ethical decisions. The term secular humanism was coined in the 20th century and was adopted by non-religious humanists in order to make a clear distinction from religious humanism. Secular humanism is also called scientific humanism. The biologist E.O. Wilson called it the only worldview compatible with science's growing knowledge of the real world and the laws of nature. Fundamental to the concept of secular humanism is the strongly held belief that ideology, be it religious or political, must be examined by each individual and not simply accepted on faith. Along with this belief, an essential part of secular humanism is an ongoing search for objective truth, which is seen to be continually adapting and changing. I'm a wordsmith.
Thank you, Harold. Laura's next. Good morning. I brought my favorite poem. I'm a creature of nature, and I spend a lot of time out in the woods. That's where I cleanse and regenerate, and by the ocean, and my sense of nature is just, it's my grounding, it's my roots. So this is called Wild Geese by Mary Oliver. I'm sure a lot of you will be familiar with it. You do not have to be good. You do not have to walk on your knees for 100 miles through the desert repenting. You only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. Tell me about your despair, and I will tell you mine. But meanwhile, the world goes on. Meanwhile, the sun and the clear pebbles of the rain are moving across the landscapes, over the prairies and the deep trees, the mountains and the rivers. Meanwhile, the wild geese, high in the clean blue air, are headed home again. Whoever you are, no matter how lonely, the world offers itself to your imagination, calls to you like the wild geese, harsh and exciting, over and over announcing your place in the family of things. Thank you, Laura. That was beautiful. Who's next? Linda.
So, I'm going to read from Nora Ephron, who, among other things, wrote When Harry Met Sally. And it's from a book called I Feel Bad About My Neck and Other Thoughts on Being a Woman. But don't let that put you off, because actually it's about aging. And it's from the chapter What I Wish I'd Known. And she just has a little list, and I'll pick a couple, and then I'll give you a couple of what I wish I had known. Okay. The last 4 years of psychoanalysis are a waste of money. The plane is not going to crash. Anything you think is wrong with your body at the age of 35, you will be nostalgic for at the age of 45. You can order more than one dessert. When your children are teenagers, it's important to have a dog so that someone in the house is happy to see you. Back up your files. There's no point in making pie crust from scratch. If only a third of your clothes are mistakes, you're ahead of the game. Okay, those are hers, and these are mine. What I wish I'd known. Four-wheel drive cars are useful in Wisconsin when you live on a hill. Figure out where the circuit breaker box and the main water valve shutoff are. Get into football. Winter can be long in the upper Midwest. Learn to give directions using the terms north, south, east, and west. And coffee can be as important as meditation. Thank you.
Thanks, Linda. It might even be more important, I think. Dennis is next.
I spent most of my life in scientific and engineering fields, and I found this quote that was... I found this quote from James Clerk Maxwell, who was a 18th century physicist, and he was also a teacher, and this is from his first lectures as a teacher at a college. He says, "In this class, I hope you will learn not merely results or formula applicable to cases that may possibly occur in our practice afterwards, but the principles on which those formula depend, and without which the formula are mere mental rubbish. I know the tendency of the human mind is to do anything rather than think, but mental labor is not thought, and those who have, with labor, acquired the habit of application often find it much easier to get up a formula than to master a principle." That's the end of this quote. And one saying I've learned early on that I found was valuable was To interpolate is human, to extrapolate is divine. So, that's all we have.
Thank you, Dennis. I'm going to intersperse a few of the things that Paul left with me here, so I'll just do the Wendell Berry things he left me here. Wendell Berry is an American novelist, poet, environmental activist, cultural critic, and farmer. Paul likes Berry, not only because he makes him think, but because he's a fighter and a staunch individualist. He's written many things in his 79 years, and Paul's read just a bit. I've read none. Here are some quotes that capture some of his strength. This poem from Berry is titled Manifesto, The Mad Farmer Liberation Front, and comes from his book, The Country of Marriage, published in 1973. Love the quick profit, the annual raise, vacation with pay. Want more of everything, ready-made. Be afraid to know your neighbors and to die. And you will have a window in your head. Not even your future will be a mystery anymore. Your mind will be punched in a card and shut away in a little drawer. When they want you to buy something, they will call you. When they want you to die for profit, they'll let you know. So friends, every day do something that won't compute. Love the Lord. Love the world. Work for nothing. Take all that you have and be poor. Love someone who does not deserve it. Denounce the government and embrace the flag. Hope to live in that free republic for which it stands. Give your approval to all you cannot understand. Praise ignorance. For what man has not encountered, he has not destroyed. Ask the questions that have no answers. Invest in the millennium. Plant sequoias. Say that your main crop is the forest that you did not plant, that you will not live to harvest. Say that the leaves are harvested when they have rotted into the mold. Call that profit. Prophecy such returns. Put your faith in the 2 inches of humus that will build under the trees every 1,000 years. Listen to carrion. Put your ear close and hear the faint chattering of the songs that are to come. Expect the end of the world. Laugh. Laughter is immeasurable. Be joyful, though you have considered all the facts. So long as women do not go cheap for power, please women more than men. Ask yourself, will this satisfy a woman satisfied to bear a child? Will this disturb the sleep of a woman near giving birth? Go with your love to the fields. Lie down in the shade. Rest your head in her lap. Swear allegiance to what is nighest your thoughts. As soon as the generals and the politicals can predict the motions of your mind, lose it. Leave it as a sign to mark the false trail, the way you didn't go. Be like the fox, who makes more tracks than necessary, some in the wrong direction. Practice resurrection. And this other piece is called From the Unsettling of America, Culture and Agriculture. Let me outline briefly as I can what seemed to me the characteristics of these opposite kinds of mind. I can see the strip miner to be a model exploiter, and as a model nurturer, I take the old-fashioned idea or ideal of a farmer. The exploiter is a specialist, an expert. The nurturer is not. The standard of the exploiter is efficiency. The standard of the nurturer is care. The exploiter's goal is money, profit. The nurturer's goal is health, his land's health, his own, his family's, his community's, his country's. Whereas the exploiter asks of a piece of land only how much and how quickly can it be made to produce, the nurturer asks a question that is much more complex and difficult. What is its carrying capacity? That is, how much can be taken from it without diminishing it? What can it produce dependably for an indefinite time? The exploiter wishes to earn as much as possible by as little work as possible. The nurturer expects certainly to have a decent living from his work, but his characteristic wish is to work as well as possible. The competence of the exploiter is in organization. That of the nurturer is in order, a human order, that is, that accommodates itself both to the other order and to mystery. The exploiter typically serves an institution or organization. The nurturer serves land, household, community, place. The exploiter thinks in terms of numbers, quantities, hard facts. The nurturer in terms of character, condition, quality, kind. And our next reader is Arlene.
This is scary. I'm reading from the prophet. And the reason I chose this is because I have a favorite in here, which is on children. But when I went to get the book yesterday and I looked at it, I was surprised to see the inscription in the front. To Mom from Vicki, Christmas, 1973. So I stopped to figure that out, and that would make her 14 years old when she gave this to me, so that made it especially meaningful. And this is Anne Children. And a woman who held a babe against her bosom said, "Speak to us of children." And he said, "Your children are not your children. They are the sons and daughters of life's longing for itself. They come through you, but not from you. And though they are with you, yet they belong not to you. You may give them your love, but not your thoughts, for they have their own thoughts. You may house their bodies, but not their souls, for their souls dwell in the house of tomorrow, which you cannot visit, not even in your dreams. You may strive to be like them, but seek not to make them like you, for life goes not backward, nor tarries with yesterday. You are the bows from which your children as living arrows are sent forth. The archer sees the mark upon the path of the infinite, and he bends you with his might that his arrows may go swift and far. Let your bending in the archer's hand be for gladness, for even as he loves the arrow that flies, so he loves also the bow that is stable."
Thank you, Arlene. I remember having that book myself. Elizabeth is next.
Good morning. I'm a scientist and a teacher, but for as long as I can remember, I've been reading and writing poems. And when I was working on my doctorate in Colorado, I went to this amazing five-story bookstore in Denver. I thought it was like awesome. And I found this book, and I was so excited by the poem on the back. The book is titled Ain't I a Woman? And I bought the whole book without noticing that parts of its insides were all cut out. But I love the poem so much I still would have bought it. This is written by Sojourner Truth, who was born in 1797, lived till 1883, and of course was a former slave. "Ain't I a woman? That man over there say, a woman needs to be helped into carriages and lifted over ditches, and to have the best place everywhere. Nobody ever helped me into carriages or over mud puddles or gives me a best place. And ain't I a woman? Look at me, look at my arm. I have plowed and planted and gathered into barns, and no man could heed me. And ain't I a woman? I could work as much and eat as much as a man when I could get to it, and bear the lash as well. And ain't I a woman? I have won 13 children and seen most all sold into slavery. When I cried out in mother's grief, none but Jesus heard me. And ain't I a woman? That little man in black there say a woman can't have as much rights as a man, because Christ wasn't a woman. Where did your Christ come from? From God and a woman. Man had nothing to do with him. If the first woman God ever made was strong enough to turn the world upside down all alone, Together, women ought to be able to turn it right side up again.
Thank you, Elizabeth. I actually have something that I think would be appropriate to read after that. Paul had picked out a poem by Maya Angelou, so they seem to kind of go together. Maya Angelou was an African-American author, poet, dancer, actress, and singer. She died this year on May 28, 2014, at the age of 86. But her words live on. I'd like you to hear the words from her poem called Still I Rise and feel the strength that she brought to living each day. Still I Rise. You may write me down in history with your bitter, twisted lies. You may trod me in the very dirt, but still, like dust, I'll rise. Does my sassiness upset you? Why are you beset with gloom? Because I walk like I've got oil wells pumping in my living room. Just like moons and like suns, with the certainty of tides, just like hope springing high, still I'll rise. Did you want to see me broken, bowed head with lowered eyes, shoulders falling down like teardrops, weakened by my soulful cries? Does my haughtiness offend you? Don't you take it awful hard, because I laugh like I've got gold mines digging in my backyard. You may shoot me with your words, you may cut me with your eyes, you may kill me with your hatefulness, but still, like air, I'll rise. Does my sexiness upset you? Does it come as a surprise that I dance like I've got diamonds at the meeting of my thighs? Out of the huts of history's shame, I rise. Up from a past that's rooted in pain, I rise. I'm a black ocean, leaping and wide. Welling and swelling, I bear in the tide. Leaving behind nights of terror and fear, I rise. Into a daybreak that's wondrously clear, I rise. Bringing the gifts that my ancestors gave, I am the dream and the hope of the slave. I rise, I rise, I rise. Our next person is Rick.
Yes, I had it memorized. I didn't plan on doing this, so I'm going to do this kind of day I live. when I was in college, about the only thing that stuck with me back then was Kurt Vonnegut. My dream was to be an English professor teaching just Kurt Vonnegut. So coincidentally, I'm not sure why things happen in this universe, but on Facebook I have maybe 10 people, friends only. I've deleted everybody that said anything political. They're gone. But I get Kurt Vonnegut quotes every morning and Wayne Dwyer. Sometimes they say the same thing, just different words. So, and being a person that's never been able to get through page 5 of a self-help book without putting it down and picking up a mystery novel, I finally found something a few years ago that kind of relates to how I found this place. And the author's name is Miguel Ruiz. Some of you may be familiar with this. It's called The Four Agreements. And that's the one thing that's been able to help me. So again, I'm going to have to do this in memory. I started several years ago with the first agreement, which is use your word with integrity. And again, I may have not had that exactly right. and I had trouble with that one because that meant I had to be honest all day, never lie, never hurt anybody. Sometimes I'd make it 5 minutes. If I opened my mouth, something wasn't going to work with my word. I finally realized that maybe I wasn't going to be perfect and just give myself a little break. And that helped a lot. So I finally said, okay, I'll move on to step two after 2 years of trying to get through the first agreement. And the second one is don't make assumptions. And I love that one. I use it every day. And I think it helps a lot because I'll make these assumptions that guy is a bad person because he cut me off on the highway. Probably not true. Most of the time when I make assumptions, I find out later that they probably weren't right, or at least they have to be diligent to find out. And even then, I don't necessarily want to put all my money on my assumption. So that one's helped me daily, especially when I meet people, because I make assumptions on them that are wrong, and it doesn't help me. The next one is don't take it personally. That's the third. And I really like that one, too. Kind of goes with the second one to me. Don't make assumptions and then don't take it personally. Just like I don't want to make assumptions about someone else, I'm not really affecting their life. The person that cut me off, I can be mad at him all day. He didn't even realize he did it, and he's thinking about maybe something. Maybe he has a bad day. So, again, don't take it personally. And the last one is pretty simple, just do your best. But I really like the middle two, of not making assumptions and then not taking it personally. So that's as far as I've gotten in self-help, but now I'm going to be so I'm going to progress. Thanks.
Thank you, Rick. Diana's next.
I'm very awkward. I have this book that I received from the two nurses that cared for Wally before he died. It's called Living When a Loved One Has Died. And if you ever would like to borrow it, you are welcome. I received so much comfort from this. It's big print, it's short, but it says so much. So I'll just go past all the parts that make me cry, which is very easy to do, and come to the recovery and growth. You may not have completely regained your balance, yet life continues, though scars remain. You are breathing, moving, functioning. You are now able to remember the one you loved and the circumstances surrounding the death without falling apart. You had underestimated your ability to survive. If there is darkness when you turn back, there is still enough light to go forward. Death has brought you face to face with your own mortality. You are looking at this irrational world with different eyes. You gain insights that had previously escaped you. That which does not kill me makes me stronger. You've heard that, Friedrich Nietzsche. You are more aware than before of what is significant and what is trivial. Your beloved lived, but you're still alive. The future is worth expecting. That was Henry David Thoreau. You have changed. You have grown. You understand for the first time what the psalmist meant when he said, "Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death." The important words are walk through. You walk through. You do not remain where you were. Life is for the living, even though you cry and you cry and you cry.
Thank you, Diane. I can really relate to that. Maybe I need to borrow the book sometime. Our next presenter is David.
Hello. I'm not actually going to read anything because the passage I would have liked to have read, I could not find this morning, so I'll find it again later, I'm sure. But I'm in the middle of this book I got about a week ago from my public library called Leaving the Fold with Marlene Wynell. And she's a psychiatrist out of California. She studied at Berkeley, actually. But for some of you I've shared this with, and I think most of you I haven't, but my background is I kind of came from a very conservative, kind of Christian fundamentalist mindset. I tried to go into the ministry through there, and I ended up kind of having some kind of a change of opinion about a lot of things. And so it's a long story, but I won't go into that now. But I found this book very helpful. It just really talks about what's going on inside of that movement. And I think, you know, it's kind of a self-help book, so I don't know if Rick might not get past page 5. But, no, but I mean, in all honesty, it's been helpful for me, though. And, you know, I don't know if anybody else has that background, but I think it's really a good read to get into because it really examines where you've been. And sure, when you say, "I've been religiously traumatized," people will look at you like, "Oh, yeah, right." But it's kind of a thing. It really is. So I really recommend it. I found it very helpful, and I'm only like this much of the way through. So, but it's a good book. So that's all I want to say. Thank you.
Thanks, David. Did you have something?
Yeah, can I add
to that? Sure. What's your name?
Andy.
Andy. Okay. You're on. All right. I'm going to insert a couple things here from Paul. Paul has some good stuff here. I don't know how many of you are familiar with Terry Pratchett. Some of the stuff I'm going to read now is from Terry Pratchett. He has here, or should I say, Sir Terence David John Pratchett, as he was knighted in 2009, is an English fantasy writer. In particular, he is the creator of Discworld series, which is currently consisting of some 40 books, all set in a large disc resting on the backs of four giant elephants who stand on the giant turtle Great Atun as it swims through space. These are humorous books, but even as they parody our history and make us smile, they give us a mirror for looking at ourselves. And I'm just going to pick some of the quotes that he had here. This quote is from Hogfather. Everything starts somewhere, though many physicists disagree. But people have always been dimly aware of the problem with the start of things. They wonder how the snowplow driver gets to work, or how the makers of dictionaries look up the spelling of words. This quote is from Small Gods. The Athenians believed that every man should have the vote, provided he wasn't poor, foreign, nor disqualified by reason of being mad, frivolous, or a woman. Every 5 years, someone was elected to be tyrant, provided he could prove that he was honest, intelligent, sensible, and trustworthy. Immediately after he was elected, of course, it was obvious to everyone that he was a criminal madman and totally out of touch with the view of the ordinary philosopher in the street looking for a towel. And then 5 years later, they elected another one just like him. And really, it was amazing how intelligent people kept on making the same mistakes. And this is a one-line quote from Witches Abroad. People think that stories are shaped by people. In fact, it's the other way around. And the last one is, this quote is from Unseen Academicals. Truth is female, since truth is beauty rather than handsomeness. This, ridiculously reflected as the council grumbled in, it would certainly explain the saying that a lie could run around the world before truth has got its correction, her boots on, since she would have to choose which pair. The idea that any woman in a position to choose would have just one pair of boots being beyond rational belief. Indeed, as a goddess, she would have lots of shoes, and thus many choices, comfy shoes for home truths, hobnail boots for unpleasant truths, simple clogs for universal truths, and possibly some kind of slipper for self-evident truths. More important right now was the kind of truth he was going to have to impart to his colleagues, and he decided not on the whole truth, but instead on nothing but the truth, which dispensed with the need for honesty. And I'm going to read you a letter. Somebody mentioned Kurt Vonnegut. This is a letter from Kurt Vonnegut. This is actually mine. Anything I have is from Facebook, so I actually saw this on Facebook. But it's a letter that Kurt Vonnegut wrote to some students who had written to him in his later years. And it starts off, Dear Xavier High School and Ms. Lockwood and Ms. Yours, Perrin, McFeely, Batten, Moore, and Conguista. I thank you for your friendly letters. You sure know how to cheer up a really old geezer, 84, in his sunset years. I don't make public appearances anymore because I now resemble nothing so much as an iguana. What I have to say to you, moreover, would not take long. To wit, practice any art, music, singing, dancing, acting, drawing, painting, sculpting, poetry, fiction, essays, reportage, no matter how well or badly. Not to get money and fame, but to experience becoming. To find out what's inside you, to make your soul grow. Seriously, I mean starting right now, do art and do it for the rest of your lives. Draw a funny or nice picture of Ms. Lockwood and give it to her. Dance home after school and sing in the shower and on and on. Make a face in your mashed potatoes. Pretend you're Count Dracula. Here's an assignment for tonight, and I hope Ms. Lockwood will flunk you if you don't do it. Write a six-line poem about anything, but rhymed. No fair tennis without a net. Make it as good as you possibly can, but don't tell anybody what you're doing. Don't show it or recite it to anybody, not even your girlfriend or your parents or whatever, or Ms. Lockwood, okay? Tear it up into teeny-weeny pieces and discard them into widely separated trash receptacles. you will find that you have already been gloriously rewarded for your poem. You have experienced becoming, learned a lot more about what's inside you, and you have made your soul grow. God bless you all. Kurt Vonnegut. And our next presenter is Robin. Would you like the mic, Rob, too? Obi Jim?
I saw this was going to be the service for the day, and when Larry was one, then a couple of John Prine songs, Tom Robbins, Kurt Vonnegut, all sorts of things that have moved me. But then I remembered this was in our hymnal, and it was however many years ago when I changed my life around. And I had this poem, or a version of it, I don't know if it's a poem, but I had a version of this on my wall all through college. And in speech class in 1975, we had to bring something to read that meant something to us. And I took this down from the wall and wrote down the words to John Prine's Hello in there. And then when I turned my life around, 9 years ago, and I was at a recovery meeting and looking through books of their sayings and cliches, and sure enough, it was there. And then I came and found this place and was looking through this book, and it was here. And it just reminded me of a lot of things. But this is attributed to Kalidasa, and the one I had just said has translated from the Sanskrit. But it goes, look to this day, for it is life. The very life of life. In its brief course lies all the verities and realities of your existence, the bliss of growth, the glory of action, the splendor of beauty. For yesterday is but a dream, and tomorrow is only a vision. But today, well lived, makes every yesterday a dream of happiness, and every tomorrow a vision of hope. Look well, therefore, to this day.
Thanks, Jim. Andy?
So my name is Andy, and I'm just visiting for today, and Linda instructed me that it was going to be a unique service and to just go with the flow. So this is me going with the flow and living in the now. So obviously I did not have anything prepared for today, but I consulted the oracle that lives in my pocket, which is really amazing. You can just find any answer to any question or any information you wanted. So I'm reading a book right now by Alan Watts called The Wisdom of Insecurity, and he talks, I didn't plan this when I started to read the book, but there were so many good quotes or sentences that I just started to highlight and go through, and I really wish I would have brought in that book today, but of course, not knowing what I would be doing, I failed to do that. So I just looked online for some quote from him, from his book, because I could really speak to about anything that was in there. And so this is the quote, and he talks about in his book about the human's need, or I guess the modern man's need to feel secure by labeling and trying to hold on to something solid, you know, get the big house, you know, get a title for yourself, like so you have some kind of rock to, I guess, live off of, and that kind of desire is just, it's not true. There is nothing like that. There are nothing physical in any way that you would be able to do that on. So this quote is actually just about time and how, you know, we think of the past and the future, but these are really just ideas that are in our head. They're not the only real thing. Is obviously what is happening right now in this present moment. So I should probably just read the quote. So it says, if then my awareness of the past and the future makes me less aware of the present, I must begin to wonder whether I am actually living in the real world. And I think that's really cool because when you think about labels of things, Democrats, Republicans, these are ideas, these are archetypes that we have in our brains. And so, when you meet a Republican, that's how it's like you have this film over how you're perceiving them, and so they're just, that's all they're going to be to you. Or maybe it's, a cancer patient, you're meeting them, that's what they are to you. Instead of getting rid of that and just simply experiencing them as they are in that moment, that's been a kind of life-changing for me. Another one that I have two quotes. So the other one is a quote from Eckhart Tolle, who was actually catalyst that kind of started or just really ramped up my spiritual growth with his book, The Power of Now. And he says here, "The primary cause of unhappiness is never the situation, but the thought about it. Be aware of the thoughts you are thinking. Separate them from the situation, which is always neutral. It is as it is." And I think that's really powerful. My background, by the way, is psychology. I love psychology, and I graduated in 2010 with a bachelor's of psychology. And since college, I have kind of started to get more into philosophy and spirituality, and kind of where they all meet is consciousness. It's kind of like that, a cross point between all of that, this kind of continuous experience that we are having all the time, and how we as people are supposed to live the best way possible that would kind of optimize the experience for everybody. So that's where I'm at right now. Thank you for listening, and I really just encourage you, if you are looking for that deeper spiritual exploration, The Power of Now has been a very powerful book for myself. So I would encourage that generally. Thanks.
Well, thank you, Andy. I really like your ingenuity in using your phone right here in church. That was good. Is there anybody else who would like to present anything who didn't get on the list for some reason? Oh, come on up, Jay. And who else? Oh, I'm sorry, Terry. I didn't see you over on the wrong side there. Must be over here.
Well, this is going to be a little different vein. It's going to start with a joke. Back when I was in high school, our high school science teacher was kind of a dour character, but every now and then he'd just trying to show us what a good guy he was by telling a joke. And the joke started out, he said, "Did you hear about the electrocution at the bakery?" Now, I don't know, not all of you know what a bakery is. They don't have those anymore. There used to be a store that was especially where you go in there and they had donuts and bread and everything that they made the night before. But anyway, so the punchline was, well, somebody tried to eat a cookie but it had a currant in it. But you all know what a currant is. C-U-R-R-A-N-T. A fruit. And now I'm going to lead into where I'm going with this. And in our little children's garden out here, right outside the fence, there's a currant bush. And right now it's just absolutely loaded with currants. And wouldn't it be nice if somebody who knew what to do with currants, when I was a kid, my mother used, we had a currant bush, and my mother would, we'd pick the currants and she'd make currant jelly, and it was so good. I'm just going to suggest, if somebody is of the spirit to do so, pick the currants, make some jelly or something like that good to eat, and then maybe bring some part of it in to share with our children. That's all I have to say.
Thanks, Jerry. Come on up, Jerry. I have to say, Tammy, I used my phone as Diane was reading, and I already ordered you that book. And the other two that are used are Amazon. And I also looked up Ruiz and Andy. We are huge Eckhart Tolle fans. We've done all kinds of readings and book clubs, and I've read those books 1,000 times, so welcome. This one is entitled Anyway, and I know you've heard it, but it's one of my favorite little cards to give.
I think it's quoted by Mother Teresa, but I believe it was a different author, if you know this. Sorry. Anyway, people are often unreasonable, illogical, and self-centered. Forgive them anyway. If you are kind, people will accuse you of selfish, ulterior motives. Be kind anyway. If you are successful, you will win some false friends and some true enemies. Succeed anyway. People may cheat you. Be honest and frank anyway. What you spend years building, someone could destroy overnight. Build anyway. If you find serenity and happiness, they may be jealous. Be happy anyway. The good you do today, people will often forget tomorrow. Be good anyway. Do good anyway. Give the world the best you have, and it may never be enough. Give the best to the world you've got anyway. You see, in the final analysis, it is between you and the universe. It was never between you and them anyway.
Thanks. Thank you, Terry. I love that one. I'm going to just... you have something?
I think I want to say something.
Okay. Do you want to come on up?
Sure.
I read about the service a while ago and I totally forgot about it. So I don't have anything prepared, but what different people were saying really hit me in the face yesterday. And the power of now and being in the moment. Last night I was at a party for fireworks over here on Nagawicca, and the host was a friend's son. And I've been there before and kind of have stayed away from him because he's a very prominent Republican, voted in everything in our county. So, you know, I have this brother also, etc. So I have this vision of what is a Republican, and it's not really that great. Last night we got into a conversation, he and I. Somehow he came up to me and started to talk to me, and I was amazed because I was very impressed. And the conversation was about that when he goes on trips, like he takes a family, they just make fly to Europe or somewhere, and Europe is what he was mostly talking about, and he doesn't make any reservations. And he stays, he was in Italy and he was thinking about going to Florence and he didn't have any reservations, and they looked at him and you have three small children and you come here without a reservation, you expect to get somewhere. But he had spoken to a taxi driver and he makes friends that way. And he told him about a little village somewhere maybe 10 miles away. So he ended up going to this little village, staying in this very quaint hotel, getting in on a wedding, meeting people. I mean, and this is the way he travels. And this is a Republican. That sounds so darn Democrat, doesn't it? Anyway, so I just wanted to share that. Be in the now. You're absolutely correct. Never make judgments. I do. So, I mean, I've made lots of judgments, and I'm learning. Thank you.
Thank you, Barbara. Is there anybody else moved to speak at this point? Okay, I'm just going to share a couple more things with you and then we'll close the service. This is from Pablo Neruda. Well, the only way I knew the name Neruda, by the way, was from the musical Rent. I don't know if any of you know Rent, but there's a long song there called La Boheme, and they just name off all of these things that are symbolic of living the bohemian lifestyle. And Neruda is one of those things. So. Pablo Neruda was a poet, a diplomat, and a politician from Chile. He won the Nobel Prize for Literature in 1971 and died in 1973. Among his unpublished works at the time of his death was a manuscript for the Book of Questions. These poems are like Zen koans. working to change how we think, to enlighten us. The poems are numbered and consist in all of 316 unanswerable questions, questions that touch on the comic and the surreal and open our imaginations. This is a book Paul comes back to and which makes him wish he knew Spanish so he could read it in the original. Here are two of the poems from the Book of Questions. Tell me, is the rose naked, or is that her only dress? Why do trees conceal the splendor of their roots? Who hears the regrets of the thieving automobile? Is there anything in the world sadder than a train standing in the rain? And the next poem is, and what did the rubies say standing before the juice of pomegranates? Why doesn't Thursday talk itself into coming after Friday? Who shouted with glee when the color blue was born? Why does the earth grieve when the violets appear? And I found this again on the internet. I find everything on the internet. I'm sure many of you know the books of Pooh Bear and his friend Christopher Robin. Well, Christopher Robin was a real person. He was A.A. Milne's son. And actually, if you want to see a picture of the two of them together, I have it here. You can look at it after the service. But so when A.A. Milne wrote this, it was for his son, the real Christopher Robin. If there ever is a tomorrow when we're not together, there is something you must always remember. You're braver than you believe, and stronger than you seem, and smarter than you think. Now let me shuffle through all these papers here. Thank you to all of you who have shared and have listened. We will close our time together with some final words, after which I will extinguish the chalice and sound the ringtone. Our closing words come from the hymnal number 434 by Anonymous. May we be reminded here of our highest aspirations and inspired to bring our gifts of love and service to the altar of humanity. May we know it once again that we are not isolated beings, but connected in mystery and miracle to the universe, to this community, and to each other.
You can get up.